Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show, and I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney, the first pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. That was Deuteronomy 28, starting with the 15th verse. But I tell you, we're fighting a real battle here in the city of Benton Harbor. There has been something that has happened for the first time in the history of the United States. Let me read it to you. It says, emergency financial manager fires entire government of the city of Benton Harbor. What he have done, he have fired every single elected official. Oh, that's right. The first time in history this has ever been done. It says here, as you probably know, Michigan Governor Rick Snyder recently signed a legislation passed by the Republican Party, House and Senate, giving the state-appointed emergency financial manager, the EFM, historical broad and sweeping power. These new powers allow the EFM to cancel, modify contracts, include with union, and even to fire the government, the elected officials. Today, for the first time, an EFM did just that. According to a press release from the Michigan AFL-CIO, Joseph L. Harris, the EFM for Benton Harbor, Michigan, issued an order prohibiting all action by all city elected officials, telling them you have no more authority. The only thing that you can do as of today, you can have a meeting. You can write down the minutes, and you can adjourn it. You have no other power. You cannot make any other decision. What we have here in the city of Benton Harbor is a dictator, the first one in the history of the United States. This is something for everybody in the United States to take heed to. But we'll talk about this later. Let's get into our show and let's listen to a little Martin Luther King.
So even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring. From the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire, let freedom ring. From the mighty mountains of New York, let freedom ring. From the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania, let freedom ring. From the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado, let freedom ring. From the curvaceous slopes of California, but not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi. From every mountainside, let freedom ring. And when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, we'll be able to join hands.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. And I don't want to delay this. I want to bring on my co-host, Larry Pinckney. Larry Pinckney, are you there?
I am, my brother. It's good to hear your voice, as always.
You're always good to hear your voice. I'm glad you made it back safely, which is even more important, my brother. I'm so happy to hear you, hear your voice. And I tell you, we have the queen of our show, the queen of the Pinckney Show, right here on the line also. But, Larry, if you feel like saying a few words, you can say a few words. You can go right into our show.
Well, all I want to say is I really want to thank the audience, as always, for listening to the Pinckney Show. And as being a veteran of the Black Panther Party myself, I want to say all power to the people. And with that, I would like to go right into the show. We have our comrade sister, Kilu Nyasha, with us, who has a very, very special guest, Sister Pam Africa. And I'm going to leave it at that, but let me just say that Sister Kilu, as I believe our audience has listened to us before, knows Sister Kilu is an outstanding, prolific writer. She is also a veteran of the Black Panther Party. She has been engaged for many, many years in the struggle for justice and human rights, equal rights, if I may say, across the board for political prisoners and prisoners in general. With that, I'm just not going to take any more time. I want to go right to Sister Kilu. Kilu, are you there?
Yes, I am, Brother Larry, and Reverend Pinckney, thank you so much. And is Pam Africa with us?
Yes, indeed.
You
want to move?
All right, Sister Love. There's just one thing I have to correct, and I didn't say anything last week, Reverend Pinckney, but I really don't want to be called queen. I know you mean to give me the highest praise by that, but I'm strictly an egalitarian, an equalitarian. I believe in equality, and I'm struggling for the elimination of hierarchy. So I disdain queen and prefer sister. Comrade.
And you know what? We will honor your request.
Thank you so much. And Pam, with that,
Pam,
are you, my dear sister?
I'm fine. I'm on the move. How's my brothers there?
Right on. Hey,
okay.
We're doing great.
Right on, right on. And Listen, I just want to say a word about the Benton Harbor thing that Reverend Pinckney spoke to earlier. It's very, very important that even if you don't live in Benton Harbor, that you raise hell about this action that's going on, because, you know, if they come in the morning for Benton Harbor, you
that's
can believe
right.
they're going to be back for the next town and the next and the next. So they will eliminate our ability to raise our voice in any way. So we really should raise hell about that. But today I want to focus on Mumia Abu-Jamal and the Move 9. And, Pam, tell us who Mumia is and who the Move 9 are.
Oh, you got an hour show. But just that. Look, you know, Mumia Abu-Jamal is a black political prisoner on death row for the accusation of killing a police officer. And there's a whole worldwide movement from people from, you know, Africa, from, when Nelson Mandela was president, he spoke out on it. President Jacques Chirac, same thing, he spoke out on it. And, you know, the European Parliament, the entire black congressional caucus all stated very clearly that evidence points to the fact, and the black congressional caucus said that evidence points to the fact that this man could possibly be innocent. And but one thing for sure, we all know he didn't have a fair trial. You don't railroad a guilty person, you railroad an innocent person, and that's exactly what's happening here. My family and the Move 9, and we're also victims of the government bombing of our home, killing 11 black men, women, and children, and Move in 1985. That's all behind the fact that we refuse to back down, suck up, kiss up to this government. There is nothing on this earth at all that we wish to compromise. You can't compromise your air, your water, your soil. You can't compromise the freedom of our people. You got to stand up and, you know, don't back down. This is why they dropped the bomb on us. This is what they claim is because we use profanity. They claim is because we are a black nationalist organization, and we are not a black nationalist organization. We are an organization that strongly believes in the protection of all life, regardless of color, regardless, you know, animal life, water life, you know, all life, and we don't compromise that, you know, one bit. So this government in 1978 sent, you know, over 500 cops with hand grenades. They boasted about shooting 10,000 rounds of ammunition into our home. And, you know, they talked about, you know, on a witness stand and where they heard babies crying. These are sharpshooters. They don't have to see it. They can hear it and kill it. They talked about how when they heard the area where the women and the children were at, and they was crying because they had, you know, put thousands of pounds of water pressure in the house, shot thousands of rounds of ammunition in there. And what they stated was when they heard those children crying, and that's where they emptied their guns out. And we say long live John F. Kennedy. Every man, woman, and child in our family came out of that basement in 1978. And the cops were so confused and crazy, and they wound up shooting their own people. There's a cop by the name of James Ramp who was murdered in 1978 when the cops came to our home. He had a cop's bullet in the back of his, you know, going down in a downward position, you know, going down his neck at his back. This man was facing our home. We were 6 feet below, and it would have been impossible for us to shoot this man in the back of his neck with a bullet traveling down. My family was sentenced to 30 to 100 years, not for the accusation or not that they could prove that we killed the cop, but because we are freedom fighters, we are disciples of John Africa, and our position is you do not compromise. There's nothing that, you know, we have to compromise. You always have to stand fast, tell the truth, and, you know, educate people, you know, no matter what. And that's not always, Reverend Pinckney, as you know, a popular position to take. And, you know, you wound up, you know, hated by the government. You get wound up being hated by people who don't like the idea that you compromise, that you don't compromise. And, you know, it's a position that we take. And, you know, because those who feel that you should compromise only learn that this government don't compromise a darn thing when it comes to the destruction, to the killing of us. Just like them laws that you was just talking about, people better understand that that is an example that they're putting out to see whether we will accept accept it.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot accept it. We must stand up. Every state, every city in the United States should be outraged about what they just heard. I know one thing, I'm putting it out every place that, you know, I go as an example of why people better understand we don't have nothing to compromise. We got children, we have family members, and I'm talking about all of us. And we got to stand up and stand up now because, look, as long as you come here, as sure as you come here in birth, you got to leave here, but you got to choose how you want to leave here. And on our choose standing up and fighting this government. Long live John Africa, and I hope that answered your question.
You sure did, my sister. That's why I love you so much. You know how to really put it out there and put it in no uncertain terms. And it prompted me to share a quote that I found that Mumia made. He said, quote, "I spend my days preparing for life."
That's right.
"Not preparing for death. They haven't stopped me from doing what I want every day. I believe in life. I believe in freedom. So my mind is not consumed with death."
Mm.
Love, life, and those things. "In many ways, on many days, only my body is here," meaning here on death row, "because I am thinking about what's happening around the world," unquote. And the bottom line is that Mumia has been close to 30 years, 29 years to be exact, on death row. And yet he has written 5 books and countless essays and radio programs and college and valedictorian speeches. And he is just an amazing human being and a brilliant journalist. And the whole world houses supporters of Mumia. We toured France, and I'm sure Pam can testify. She's been all over the world practically in behalf of Mumia, and people are even more supportive of Mumia outside this country, largely because they're much more politically conscious and are also very much against the death penalty, and especially in Europe. So he has incredible support in Europe and South Africa and all over the world. But right here, we seem to have fallen asleep. So, Pam, tell our listeners what the latest moves are to stop them from killing our brother.
Well, you know, Mumia has a new set, a new legal team. And
right.
A sister by the name of Christine Swan, who's with the NAACP Legal Defense, not to be confused with the NAACP, but the NAACP Legal Defense is something completely different.
Right.
He's picked a new legal team. I don't want to go in details about, him getting rid of his other lawyer, but you know it had to be a good reason why he switched lawyers, midstream again. Like I said, we have nothing to compromise. You have people who say, you can't do that, but if it's not right, what you got to do when you're fighting for your life? You got to set an example. When people say what you can't do, you got to be able to do it. And because a lot of people get stuck with lawyers because somebody else said, if you fire that lawyer, and people going to look at you like, hey, and the only way that you can look at Mumia, if you look at the facts, is that, right on, brother, we stand with you. And that's what's, happening, right now. We're preparing now to go to France, and this small city of Saint-Denis in Paris, which is predominantly a area of color, and named the street after Mumia, and 5 years ago. And, a lot of people say, what was the big deal about that? In order to name a street after a person had to be, on that next level of life. And, they named the street after him, and the government here and city council, they was trying to pass a resolution saying that, since the city of Saint-Denis supports Mumia, a cop killer, and that, they will no longer call French fries freedom fries, and, boycott French wines, boycott the country of France. And then they went as far as saying when they went through Congress and the state representatives and that they was going to select a group of people to go over to France and, you know, to protest this, because not only was a street named after him, but in the capital of France, which is Paris, and Mumy was made an honorary citizen. I'm talking about a black man, and who came from the projects of North Philadelphia in the heart of the ghetto, and you know, who has, you know, risen to the point and so prolific in what it is that he do in righteousness, that, you know, people had grasped and stand to fight this government toe-to-toe. When this government said that they would come over there and, you know, to demand that they back up off of it, they told them, they says, well, you know, we've been waiting, and, you know, we will pay your way to come over. And, you know,
it.
But, of course, you know, they backed down. And, but what's happening now in this fifth year, and when this government is stating that Mumy can only get life in prison without the possibility of parole, or that, you know, he can get the death sentence, and they're actually pushing for the death sentence. We say neither is acceptable because we have evidence of innocence. We're not going to allow them to play that game, and you know, where, you know, you have all this evidence and they just completely, like, you know, try to say that, you know, none of this evidence exists when it's right there in black and white, and you know, that a railroad doesn't exist. They threw out evidence, you know, they threatened, they even killed the elected officials, and I'm talking about David P. Richardson, the state representative who stood on the front line, and when Governor Reed signed Mumia's death warrant and stated very clearly, and that he wasn't going to allow a chump like Governor Reed to get away with, you know, signing Mumia's death warrant. And he stated there's a lot of people that's afraid of you. He said, but we're not some of them. And, you know, this battle's been continuing. And Reverend Pinckney and, you know, a lot of the listening audience there has been there on the front line. But I want to let you know, we have not lost the battle. We are winning the battle because a lot of people look to find out what's going on their TVs, on their radios of choice. But you got to tune into to radio shows and things such as this one to get what's happening. And Sister Kilu TV show, and because if you're looking for mainstream CNN and all that other stuff, they all are part of corporate America, and they all for our demise, and you will not find it because, like Gil Scott Heron said, the revolution will not be televised. So if you're looking for it there, you're not going to find it. But if you're listening here, you'll only get strength. You only get power to go up against this government like you, I mean, the way you should, not bowing down, kissing up, sucking up, because our children's lives are on the line. Our tomorrows and today's is on the line. You know, the mere fact that these people can, you know, come and say that, you know, they're going, you know, wipe out the government there. You know, who the hell do these people think that they are? We must make these people understand this is not law, it is outlaw, and we must raise our voices and, you know, protest. We must raise our fists. We must do like they did over in other countries when you've seen them examples, and, you know, you got to do what is right. This government saith that, you know, if and it's not a direct quote, if this thing is messed up, then you got to turn it around. And I'm saying it's clear. It's evident. And I'm saying, what is people waiting on?
Right. And one of the things that I think both of us have neglected to mention is the reason in the first place that Mumia was targeted was because he was a member of the Black Panther Party. Co-founder of the Philadelphia chapter when he was just a teenager, and they haven't forgiven him for that yet. And the other thing is that he was speaking out in behalf of the MOVE family when he was captured and railroaded. So they have this has all been an attempt to silence Mumia, and they have not. They have failed miserably to do that, as his work testifies. So
can I say something, Kilo?
Oh, of course.
Let me, Sister Pam. It's wonderful having you on the program. This is Larry Pinckney. It's wonderful having you.
All right, on the move.
I want to ask you if you will expound for our audience, because, you know, we have thousands of listeners, many of whom, or at least some of whom, probably, when you said bomb, would you go into detail? I mean, we know the details, obviously, but
right.
go into detail of what these pigs did to the Move family, please, so people understand that you are not speaking in symbolic terms. These are real terms. Let me shut up and just ask you to please elaborate to our listening audience as to what they did and how that affects today. But please, go, sister.
Okay. First, I'd like to say, you know, to put the title of pig on these cops and, you know, these government officials that bombed and did our houses, and pig ain't had nothing to do with that. These people are the lowest form of life that there is, that they can concoct. What was happening, you know, in 1978, they had arrested our family and, you know, for the murder of police officer James Ramp, the cop that I was just talking about, sentenced my family to 30 to 100 years. These people in 1978 and of the scene of the crime and of what they did to us, they tore it down. They tore it down. And they learned from the lesson of Chairman Fred Hampton and in Chicago. And when they went into that house, did all the damage, the murder and stuff, and left the scene of the crime there, and they learned from doing that. You don't leave the scene of the crime, and because I'm saying as ugly as that was, that scene of the crime in Philadelphia and was just as bad, except no Move member was killed. A police officer was killed. When they failed to kill us, I don't know whether it was friendly fire or unfriendly fire, but James Ramp was a police officer who left his desk. He was an old police officer who had a hearing problem and left his house one morning, strapped on a bulletproof vest, and loaded up his round machine gun, whatever the heck weapon of, you know, life destruction that he had. Him and 500 cops came to our home. We didn't come to theirs. They came to our home serving a bogus, warrant. And in the midst of that, my family was sentenced to 30 and 100 years for the shooting of that cop. We protested. I'm getting to May 13th. We protested. And from that day on, and we gathered more and more support, a whole worldwide movement, arose from all of this. And because before they did that in 78, they cordoned our home off for 8 blocks around, not allowing people to enter in or out, unless, you had a, ID. And a lot of times people couldn't get in and out their homes. People said, well, this seems like South Africa. They cut off food and water supply for 60 days into our home this is something that people really don't realize. We had black political prisoners that was in jail, and our demand back then in 77 and 78 was that they release our political prisoners, our innocent political prisoners. And before this year-long confrontation was over, this government presented our political prisoners to us. They flew them in from the state prisons that they was at. They showed us that they were there. They did all the legal stuff, for our prison, to release our prisoners, because it was a worldwide movement watching this. And they thought for sure that any time somebody took on this government like that, you had to have underground, weaponry and all. They surrounded our house for over a year. They wouldn't let, they even collected the trash looking for, whatever they could. So when the blockade came down, what happened, as the release of our political prison, we allowed them to come in and search our home. They were so sure that they was going to find bullets. They didn't find one bullet. They found guns, but they was inoperable. Every last one of the trigger mechanisms wasn't there. Move had taken on this city, brought worldwide attention to one of the most Hitler-spitting son of a guns that ever walked the face of the earth was Mayor Rizzo, and made him look like a fool because he had spent $2.5 million on a confrontation where people was innocent, and it blew up in his face, and he let these political prisoners go. That's why a few months later they attacked our home. And then from 1978 to 1981. We was in constant protest about what they had did to our family. So they figured that, you know, what they'll do this time, they'll come in and they'll kill every man, woman, and child. They waited till they got a black mayor because they found out when Rizzo did what he did, and this government, you know, because whites and blacks rose up against him, and Rizzo could never run for office again. And so they put a black mayor in there. This black mayor and worked with them. They duped him, but he was dupable. And, you know, the only way he can be duped into, you know, going along, because this mayor, when he was city managing director, he was the one who told us he was going to do the work to get our family out because he knew that they were innocent. When this man became mayor, he wouldn't even talk to us anymore. He wound up, you know, bringing in as a city managing director Leo Brooks, who came from the Pentagon. He brought the Army in. He brought the Navy in. And the Army and, you know, not the Navy. And the Army, the FBI, and it's all in a book called The Philadelphia Magazine. Because when we did the 30th year anniversary of that bombing, or the 25th anniversary of that bombing, they did a Philadelphia Magazine article where they stated when he became mayor and how he sat down with, you know, army officials and stuff and plotted and planned how to come into our house. They didn't come and talk about plan on how to come in there and, you know, to do what's right. And they came in there to murder, and they dropped a C4 military explosive on our home. And our family was not killed by the fire. There was a documentary that was done by Fox 29 News, a forensic expert from the University of Penn and a reporter from Channel Fox 29 back in that day, and Barbara Grant, who became the and it's a good sister, and but you know, they exposed that our family was killed out in the alleyway, and the bodies was drugged and put back in that building. And and they told everybody that our family was in there, was refusing to come out. Who in the hell, excuse me, and who in the hell, and would stay in a burning fire? That's what drove Mona and you know, everybody out, was the fire. And when they came out that house, they shot every man, woman, and child down. Ramona Africa and Birdie Africa was the only two that came out. Ramona Africa, the sole adult, and was sentenced to 12 years in prison and did every last one of those years refusing to compromise, because what they were saying, all she had to do is say that she would no longer associate with MOVE, and if she say that, they would let her out in 7 years. My sister did the 12 years, as well as other people within MOVE who did that time rather than, you know, to bow down to some craziness, you know, like, you know, the Pope is a pedophile, so what do? You tell everybody that's Catholic and, you know, that you can't associate with Catholics because the Popes and, you know, all the rest of them guys and, you know, be dealing in, you know, molesting young boys. You know, but they want to take our religion and try to spit that crack down on us. We wasn't standing for it, and we brought a movement together and dealt with that situation so that the other members can come out. But, yeah, they dropped a bomb on us simply behind the fact that we do not play games with this government, and we're not concerned with anything but doing what is right. We're not concerned on how many, you know, you know, people who want to compromise, you know, positions and say, you know, you come in too strong, your language is too strong, and, you know, because you can allow people to compromise your air and your water, your soil, you know, your very, you know, your children's livelihood. The educational system is, you know, is pure chaos. All they do is teach our children how to accept this madness, this sickness. And Reverend Pinckney, you know, thank God for the magnificent stand that you took, because that's a stand that, you know, all people should take. It's, you know, it's another good example, because you didn't bow down, bend back, and you had so much support, and because you are that way. Not that you was that way. You are that way. And it's an honor to be on your show with everybody
else.
You got
about 1 minute. If anything,
let me just inject one thing, and that is that the fire department and the police and the mayor stood by and allowed 60 or 61 row houses owned by black people to burn to the ground as well that day that they dropped the bomb.
Wow.
That's Amazing Grace.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's something. But listen, you got 1 minute. You can say whatever you want. Then we got to go into the Lynn Stewart moment. Go right ahead.
Wow.
Say whatever your heart desires.
And you know what I want to say? I want to say Lynn Stewart is, you know, she's another freedom fighter, and all the support that we can gather and give. Do you know this sister, when she was on the stand for her trial and federal court and stuff, fighting for her life, and she went and mentioned about the case of Mumia, the day that they was taking her off the court and they was going to do this big sentencing and throw her and give her more time in jail, she never backed down from her position, and she never apologized for doing what was right. That is one sister that we support 100%. Long live Lynn Washington, Lynn Stewart. And you know, I'm going to shut up and I'm going to listen to the rest of this show.
Sounds good. And
at that moment,
Larry?
All right. Well, we're going to move right along. Thank you very, very, very much, Comrade Sister Kilu and Sister Pam. Thank you very, very much. Stay with us. We're going to move on to the segment of the program known as the Lynn Stewart Moment.
Mm.
Now, to give a brief synopsis of Sister Lynn, she's 71 years of age. She's a grandmother. She's a beloved, outspoken, we call her the people's lawyer. And she is imprisoned as a result of trumped-up U.S. government charges of, quote, conspiracy and providing material support to terrorists, unquote. Notice I said trumped up. She is, in fact, feared and hated by government authorities because of her tireless efforts as an attorney, a real people's lawyer, to have successfully defended clients who were political activists and others whom the government deems as, quote, undesirable and or enemies of the state. Now, Lynn has been in prison now for going on 2 years, well over a year, going on 2 years, and she's currently serving, Kilo, I'll use your word, a sadistic 10-year sentence at Carswell Federal Prison Medical Facility near Fort Worth, Texas. I'm going to end it there because we have with us, as we do every week, Lynn Stewart's husband, a man who is an activist in his own right, lifelong companion, Brother Ralph Pointer. Ralph, are you with us?
I'm with you. And Pam, how are you?
Sister on
the
move.
How are you?
The whole team.
The whole team. And one of the most wonderful things that I ever heard was the recitation of John Africa on trial.
Mm.
And, you know, if you ever have that, Pam, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Could you send that to Lynn? You know, a prophet, a true prophet, his words at his trial were what we see happening today.
It's
and how long ago was that trial? 30 years? 29 years ago?
Yeah.
And it is fabulous to sit and listen to his words. So if you would please send a copy of that to Lynn.
I will do that.
I just left her a few minutes ago. I'm in Fort Worth, Texas, and I try to visit her as much as I can, and I had an opportunity to speak to a group of lawyers over in Houston, Texas. We say Houston in our area, and it was a great weekend, and the people doing the work against the young people, the new people, the people recently graduated from college, and an interesting thing came up. You know, when the Second Circuit forced the judge to change Lynn Stewart's sentence from 28 months to 120 months, because she had continued to go around the country speaking out against the government and the things that the government did, going to law schools and universities, and these are their words, corrupting our youth. Well, some of those youth that she had corrupted were at the meeting as lawyers speaking out on issues, on all of the issues of this government. And I'm saying, wow, she's in the category of Jesus Christ and Socrates corrupting the youth. But the seeds that she spread while she was going around the country have come to fruition. And these young people were there, and more young people have heard of Lynn Stewart. And it was like going to a church service when people testified as to why they were lawyers. And it sent chills up and down my spine. And like I said, and it reminded me of the moment when I heard John Africa's sentencing statement. And he was a prophet of his time, and they put him behind bars. And it's in Lynn Stewart's appeal when the lawyer said 11 years ago, wasn't quite 11 years ago, when Lynn Stewart was arrested and when Lynn Stewart was on trial and when she sat on that witness stand, she spoke out about what was happening in Egypt. And he says, so they put her in jail. Because she was a prophet. Had they paid attention to the statement she made, when people have the heel, the boot of oppression on their necks, they will throw it off. And had they listened, they would have walked out of Egypt. But the people threw off Hosni Mubarak, and they will continue the struggle until they throw off all of the chains of oppression. As we who are out here must never forget our political prisoners who fought to throw off their chains of oppression, and we must support them. And as the words of Lynn Stewart, we must all put all of our efforts towards Mumia Abu-Jamal, because he is in the most danger of all of our political prisoners, because they are looking to kill him. And it's always when I'm on the program listening to those who Reverend Pinckney brings on to the program to speak out, and it's just amazing. And rather than speak on things, I want to say hello, congratulations, love you to those people out there fighting the good fight. And in the words of Mumia's publicist, she said at a meeting recently, the two most brilliant minds of our society are rotting in jail now, Mumia Abu-Jamal and Lynn Stewart. And we must do something. We must react. We must free them. Free them all. And on that note, I'll continue on Lynn. She's in good spirits, except that she can see what's happening out here. Not her, not what's happening with her. In the visiting room, she talks about, look at these wonderful children of women in jail. They are in jail. They are of no threat to this society and wrongfully in jail. And she said these words, but for an extra hour's work on the part of attorneys out there, they would not be in jail. She's appalled at the level of work that she looks at. As she reviews their cases, yes, as she reviews their cases. She's in jail, and she's the jailhouse lawyer of the Croswell Federal Medical Facility.
I know that's right.
Yes,
and
yes.
So she's doing her thing, and she is working on an innocence project for women. Some of the stories must be told. And she's implored me to work with people in New York, the Broadway of the world, to put on plays, to publicize their condition. And we're working on that. And she never forgets to say, listen, don't worry about me. Think of all of the people in this country convicted, unjustly convicted for crimes they didn't commit. All of the people in jail who fought for freedom that we have never achieved, the people throughout American history who have fought to make America a decent place, and we're still working on it. It's a project, a work in process, a work in progress, and we will continue our work out here mentioning their names. So I won't take another moment other than to say, please look up Lynn Stewart on your website, L-Y-N-N-E, Stewart, Stewart.org. Please look it up. If you don't have a computer, have a friend look it up so that you can write a note to her tell her you haven't forgotten her. And I spent the day reminding her of the young people who went into law school because of her. Young people who remember the words. A young man who does work now for veterans. Work now to keep people from going to the service. Work for draft resistors. He says, I don't know if you remember me. He says, it was in Seattle. Lynn Stewart came to speak. And she chastised me about thinking about myself, some of the things I had said. He says, tell her I never forgot it, and I'm a better lawyer, and I do better work because of her statement. And, you know, when I reminded Lynn, she has one of those minds. She described, you know, the young man she had spoken to. And I told her about one of the young women at the conference, and she says, oh, yes, I remember her. She described her. She says, much energy, very bright, and of star quality. And I'm saying, oh, yeah, she continued her work. They put her in jail because they knew the work she was doing. They knew what she represented. So what we must do is convince all of the other people out there why they have Mumia in jail. They know what his work is. They know how he affects all of us. But we don't know. So our work is to show our people, our side, what they know about Mumia and the other brothers and sisters. There's too many to mention, and there's too many to mention in the millions. The highest number of, statistically, the highest number of people in jail of any so-called industrial society. And you get senior moments.
Absolutely. Hey, Ralph, give the address for Lynn right fast.
I'm going to finish. Just please look it up. Let's not take time with a very important radio program to talk about specifics. LynnStewart.org. Get her address at Carswell Prison and, you know, let the world know and get every other. Turn to Jericho. Get political prisoners' addresses. Just on Jericho, JERICO.org. And it stands for something. It stands for what they all fight for. So on that note, thanks again, everyone. Love you all and continue. And, Reverend, you have a lot of things you have to tell people about, a lot of events to stop this. Lynn calls it the corporate juggernaut from crushing us all.
That's it.
Thanks again.
All right. On that note,
from
I'm
Lynn
bring
Stewart.
Libby, come in.
Okay, thank you. In Michigan, we have these people called emergency financial managers, and they have been sent to a handful of cities over the past 5 to 10 years, cities that are supposedly in financial distress. And these EFMs, or emergency financial managers, have really messed up the cities they've gone to, and they've embezzled money. And there's a lot of protesting going on in Lansing, the capital, right now. Part of what's being protested are these EFMs, because under our brand new governor, Rick Snyder, who's very right wing, a new law has been passed giving EFMs a lot more power. The very first place in Michigan, which is a big state, that the power of the new law has been used is, guess where? Benton Harbor. And it was announced on Thursday. You can find this information at bhbanco.org. And so I'll just read a short bit here. SOS, Benton Harbor is now a dictatorship. You can be sure that Whirlpool and other corporations, for that matter, are ruling Michigan side by side with the new gov, Rick Snyder, and cronies. This brief Michigan Messenger article provides a copy of the Benton Harbor EFM's order and a link to the recently passed state law, giving him the power to issue it. Benton Harbor is a community which has been abandoned, kicked, beaten, and now suffocated. No population should have had to endure for decades what Benton Harbor has. So MichiganMessenger.com has this article, which it's short, but I'll just read a small part of it. The title is Benton Harbor Emergency Manager Strips Power from All Elected Officials. This is honest to gosh truth. It's hard to believe. This was just published. The emergency financial manager of the city of Benton Harbor has issued an order stripping all city boards and commissions of all their authority to take any action. The order signed Thursday limits the actions available to such bodies to calling a meeting to order, approving the minutes, and adjourning. The bodies are prohibited under the act from taking any other action without the express authority of, guess who, this is my words, the emergency financial manager. And in this case, it's Joseph Harris. Actions such as Harris's are explicitly allowed under a newly approved law which granted sweeping new powers to emergency financial managers. The legislation has drawn large protests, including attempts by some protesters to take over the state capitol building. The sit-in resulted in numerous arrests. Okay. And then, directly after that, so that was Thursday, that came out, and then some very astute person put a comment after that article, and there's a lively discussion there, many comments after that article at MichiganMessenger.com, that just guess where this bill originated from, this huge expansion of power of the emergency financial managers. Let's see here. No one seems to have noticed who introduced this bill. It was Representative Al Pisholka, and his phone number is 517-373-1403, and guess what he represents in the state of Michigan at the state legislature? Benton Harbor and, of course, St. Joseph, which is directly over the river. Please keep these dates in mind. April of 2010, the recent governor, Granholm, assigns an emergency financial manager to Benton Harbor. The EFM draws up a plan that, if followed, would have eliminated the city manager and elected officials. Now this year, January 4th, the city commission of Benton Harbor votes to, quote, take back the power given to them by the voters and passes a resolution stripping the emergency financial manager of his authority in Benton Harbor. The next day, Representative Al Pisholka, who represents Benton Harbor, he sent a letter to our new governor, Rick Snyder, requesting that the EFM be restored to Benton Harbor, saying that the elected officials had, are you ready for this, no authority to do what they did. So they're not allowed to run their own town. And that's my words. Apparently, it was realized that the regulations governing how and what an emergency financial manager can do were not sufficient, because on February 8th, this is the last date, the same Representative Al Pisholka, state legislator, introduced the new emergency financial manager legislation, which was passed and now signed by our new governor, which gives the EFM the authority to dissolve elected commissions. So
Wow. What
we're saying here is that Al Pisholka, the representative
of Benton Harbor,
he started this bill. He originated this bill for the whole state of Michigan, and it's all about development of Benton Harbor and getting rid of any governing bodies that are going to get in the way of, guess who, Whirlpool, so that they can develop this whole area and have this. And then, of course, there's also the issue of these aquifers of water under Benton Harbor. That's a whole other story. But, you know, I had no idea that this was true until this morning. I just found this information. So right in good old Berrien County and Whirlpool, they are responsible for these huge expanded powers of the emergency financial managers that are going to possibly really ruin the communities in the state.
And you know, let me say this. They got 72 financial managers already trained to take over here in the state of Michigan already. Matter of fact, when the EFM, they're dictators because they're not elected, yet they're put in this position to control your elected officials. So now is the time. We are the first person or the first community in the history of mankind to ever have an EFM come in, take over our city who wasn't elected. And here's another thing. We're the first community that ever had an election reversed when the majority of the votes did not become the minority and the minority become the majority. See, we're the first for everything here in the city of Benton Harbor because people here have refused to take a stand. They have refused. So we're having a mass demonstration starting May 22nd through the 25th. It's not going to be into the year 2012 when they bring the PGA here. We want to be ready for them. But we're also having a demonstration June 18th here in the city of Benton Harbor. But on that note, I got to give everybody a little time. Larry, we got 3 minutes, so you go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to need him this time. Look, I want to say again to the audience, thank you very much for listening to the Pinckney to Pinckney show. I just returned today from speaking where I was invited to speak at the College of Law at Syracuse University in New York, where I did go into some detail about both the cases of our brother Mumia Abu-Jamal and, of course, our sister Lynn Stewart. I have to tell you that my heart was warm to see the response of the young people that were there, and there were a number of community people who were also there. The struggle is a we struggle. I emphasize that after going into detail. I was invited there because I was a political prisoner for 10 years, as I think most of our listeners know, and took my case to the United Nations and won that case. Okay, but the point was to use it as an opportunity to talk about political prisoners, black, white, brown, red, yellow, all political prisoners, our sisters and our brothers. So I want to pass that information on to our listening audience and remind them that all of us have a collective responsibility to be out there and organize. Not only organize against, but as Ernesto Che Guevara said, we organize for a humane system, and that's not what we have today, and that must be what we bring into fruition. We must create that kind of system. So having said that, again I say it's a we struggle. Black, white, brown, red, and yellow people, all power to the people.
All right. Hey, Pam, why don't you go ahead and take a couple of minutes and tell us your last closing words. Ms. Africa.
I think she's not there.
Okay. Well, Ralph, go ahead.
Yes. Well, as you had said, you have been predicting all along the corporate juggernaut of Whirlpool is in action. It starts in Barron County. But it doesn't finish there. It continues to the state of Michigan, and it's going to continue throughout this country. We must understand and listen to our prophets, John Africa, Pam Africa, especially you, Reverend Pinckney, have taken this opportunity to educate the people. You have told them what's going to happen. It has happened, and maybe now that it has happened, more people will begin to listen and do the work that you implore them to do. Lynn Stewart says thank you. I say thank you. And all people of intelligence and courage say thank you, Reverend. Continue.
Amen. Kilu.
Yes, thank you so much again for this opportunity. And on behalf of Mumia, please send him a birthday card. Mumia Abu-Jamal, A as in apple, 8335, A8335, 175 Progress Drive, 175 Progress Drive, Waynesburg, 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 Pennsylvania, 15370. He will be 57 years old April 24th, next Sunday, so you have time to get a nice card to him and send him your love. And I will close with a quote from him. Many people say it is insane to resist the system, but actually it is insane not to. Vote.
Beautiful.
Power to the people.
Amen. And then Mamiya, his birthday is next Sunday. My wife, Dorothy Pinckney's birthday is next Sunday. So
oh,
they're
my.
Born on the same day. And on that day, on our program, we're going to say happy birthday to Mamiya and to my wife, who's a true
right
soldier
on.
And a fighter. And I tell you this, I am so excited. Just I tell you, Kilu, it's an honor, you know, to have you on that show, because I tell you, you have really uplifted this program. You have taken us to a whole different level. And Ralph, I just want to say thank you, Ralph. Thank you, Ralph. And Larry, you
thank
know
you.
You're my man. You know I love you, and I'm just glad you made it back safely. It doesn't get any better than that. But look, the fight is just begun. I got some stuff that I want to do around here that's so incredible. It's going to knock these people's socks off. See, what's happening today with that EFM, I was talking about this back in 2004 and 2005, and they thought that I was a maniac. They thought I was a nut. They said, well, this stuff could never happen. This stuff could never happen. Now today, I'm a genius all of a sudden. I know everything there is in the world. I'm the smartest man that ever lived now, because it came to pass. You didn't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to figure this stuff out. It was right in front of our face. But look, on that note, we have just ran out of time. But next week, we're going to sing happy birthday to Mamiya, and we're going to sing happy birthday to my wife, Dorothy Pinckney. Just tell her to hang in there. Tell Mommy to hang in there, and we're going to take this thing to a whole different level. And that is all the time we have.
Good
and
night,
I wanna
my
say,
dear friend.
Yes. Good night, everybody. And take
good
care
night.
Of yourself.
Bye,
all right,
bye.
Then. Take care now. See
bye.
You later. Bye now.
Bye now.